Vines can bring a whole new dimension to your garden, and we're going to take a look at how to use them, how to take care of them, and which ones to plant. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm filling in for Larry Mueller today on Garden Talk. So glad you could join us. Liz Fremont is in the studio with me, and she provides concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Ho. Now, Liz always has some really great ideas for keeping your garden interesting. So we're going to talk about vines, and of course, we'll be taking your gardening questions. Are you thinking about adding a vine to your garden? What would you like to know? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post your questions or your pictures on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Liz, it's so nice to see you again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I love coming in.
Well, we love having you. And you know, all these years, I've been wanting to know, did you come up with a concierge horticulture services tag?
Yeah, actually, I think I did. Or it might have been Larry, too,
okay.
When we were in here one time.
I love that.
But it really goes across the spectrum of what I do.
Okay.
And sometimes that's offering other people's services rather than my own. And
like a general contractor for gardening almost.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, except that I don't. Generally, when I recommend someone to a client, potential client that has a question, I don't take a cut on it, so I just recommend.
Okay.
And that has happened over a number of years where we've gotten to know people in the industry, and I know which ones are going to do a good job. And especially if I can't do it, I'm happy to give the business to somebody else and make our gardeners happy. To me, that's the biggest thing, is the gardeners have to be happy.
We agree. We like our happy gardeners here, too. You know,
we
don't talk a whole lot about vines, and I don't know. Why do you think that is? Are they just kind of neglected, or are we just so used to them we don't notice them anymore?
You know, I think one of the reasons is, you know, we don't talk a lot about ground covers either. You know, ground covers and vines.
True.
And
mm-hmm.
things that tend to go on their own, we ignore. And vines are one of those things
mm-hmm.
that once you put them in, we expect that they're going to go and do what we want them to do without any assistance whatsoever, which is not necessarily the case.
No.
You know, often we should be really doing our research like we do with everything else to know what's invasive, what's not invasive, what's going to shoot runners, you know, those bad morning glories that are going to shoot runners out all over the place.
Oh, yes.
Or drop seed all over. So we need to know those things ahead of time.
Let me tell you about my story about hops. Oh my, they do go everywhere, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorites?
Some of my favorite, I like the weird stuff. One is, well, I love the Ipomoea family, which includes morning glory. So we can, you know, we'll talk about those.
Mm-hmm.
But moonflowers, but also the sweet
yes.
potato vines. It includes Spanish flag. It includes cardinal climbers. It includes a lot of things. And I love that family. For us, those are really annuals. And that makes it easy for us to put something in and not have to worry about it a lot, unless it's one that pops seed all over the place.
Right.
And so we do have to be aware of that. But people often disregard annual vines, and we shouldn't disregard them. As a gardener, I'm curious. I want to see what things are going to do. And sometimes my attention span is relatively short-lived, and so an annual is a good thing.
Okay.
Very good thing. There are some tropicals that I absolutely love. I love bougainvillea. When I go down south, that's a hedge. It's beautiful. Up here, if you're going to put bougainvillea in, if you're going to go and buy it and put it in,
mm-hmm.
you need to find a very large potted plant, because it doesn't flower until it's got some age on it. So, you know, that little bits of information like that can help a gardener be successful with an unusual vine.
Because there's nothing like getting all excited about a plant, putting it in, and nothing happens.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the most frequent questions I get is about trumpet vine, which many people consider a weed.
Yes.
And I recall growing up having a beautiful one in the yard. Absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful orange flowers. It was wonderful. And we would go out there and we would pop them all the time, because right before they open, it's like a little balloon. And so we would go out and pop those, and my mother would get angry with us, and we'd go out and pop them anyway. And I put one in thinking, awesome, I can have, early in my gardening career, awesome, I can have a good trumpet vine. Well, if you put a trumpet vine into rich soil it does beautifully to grow leaves, but it doesn't do much for flowers.
Oh.
And so if you have a site where it's getting leaf mold or it's just nice, rich soil, mm-hmm. often they don't do anything, but it takes a few years to figure that out.
That's why we have you here, so you can help us out with that. Now, you were talking about bougainvillea a little bit ago, and there's some beautiful vines that might not necessarily, they're iffy if they'll, mm-hmm. they'll grow here. Are there some things that we can do to keep those protected over the winter time?
Something like a bougainvillea, no.
Okay.
Because it's a tropical vine.
Right.
And so when you go to pick out a vine, look to see, is it tropical? What's the hardiness zone? Do I have to do any special work to it? Because if you're a gardener that loves to dig a trench and flop something over and put the soil on it and then mound up hay and animal pelts or whatever it is you want to do over the top of it, awesome, go for it. That's not me.
Yeah.
And most people don't have that time to do that in their lives. And so you want to look for something that's going to be easier. Now, like with a bougainvillea or any tropical, you can bring it into the house. You have to get some age on it before it's going to flower again. So if you cut it back to bring it in the house, often you won't get flowers the next year when you put it out. So one of the key things, and I learned this from my husband's aunt, she would bring in this massive bougainvillea, and she had it hanging all the way around her living room corner of the, you know, the ceiling and the wall comes together. She had hangers that were there specifically for that bougainvillea to last over winter, and then she would unhook it and haul it back outside.
Well, bless her heart.
I know. Bless her heart is right. Wonderful woman.
So what are some really good ones that you can suggest to people who, you know, you talk about the annuals. What about the ones that they just want to put in, leave them there, and
not worry about anything?
Yeah.
If you're a rose person, one of the best climbing roses is New Dawn.
New Dawn.
Dawn and New Dawn. New Dawn is a pale pink, and it kind of fades out to a white.
Okay.
It's pretty much a no-brainer. There are quite a few in the Canadian series, Explorer series, that do very well also for us that we don't have to think about. And there is a difference, a great difference between a climber, something that clings, and a rambler, something that just you're really going to prop up. It's basically a long stem shrub,
okay,
but it acts as a climber just because that's in our visual, it acts as a climber. Things that actually attach to concrete, you want to be a little bit careful about. If it attaches to wood, you want to be a bit careful about that. So, you know, for me, New Dawn Rose is easy because it doesn't cling to anything. You have to support it. You have to tie it up a little bit, but it's wonderful. I also like kiwi vine, hardy kiwi vine.
I've heard about those.
They're really easy. And yes, they do. They can produce fruit. You need both male and female.
Okay.
The leaves are quite stunning. It can be a nice variegated green, white with some pink on it. And if you've got male and female, and it's about a 7-to-1 ratio, male 1, female 7, that you may get some fruit, but it's very tiny. It's not like the ones that we buy in the grocery store.
Sure.
So you're looking at something that's maybe the size of a grape, but it is edible, and the vine itself is actually quite lovely.
Are there flowers too?
Yeah.
Not much.
They're, you know, to me, the leaf is really
Sounds
the
beautiful.
Interesting thing on that one.
Mm-hmm.
It needs full sun in order to get that variegation. If it gets shade, the variegation kind of goes away.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean it's not a good vine. It just means it's not going to be variegated.
Right.
If you want something for cover, a Dutchman's pipe is extremely easy to grow, and it's got leaves that are a good 7, 8, 9 inches across, and it will grow at easily 20 feet in a year.
Oh my.
And it's a perennial vine that you just pop in and you just walk away.
Okay.
But it doesn't go away, and so you want to be careful when you put that one in.
Okay.
The flowers actually do resemble a pipe.
Okay.
If you can find them under the leaves, it's a very small flower, yellow with a little bit of a brownie purple throat on it. But you're really on that one after the leaf cover. So if you've got a fence that you want to cover during the growing season, that one will do it beautifully. And it'll come back every year.
Well, wonderful. Well, we're going to turn to the phones right now. If you've got a question for Liz, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email, of course. That's at ideas@WPR.org. And it doesn't have to be about vines. Liz can answer pretty much everything. Let's go to Anne in Dalton. Hi, Anne. What's your question?
Hello. I just love those hosta plantings around the tree trunks I see in some people's yards.
Mm-hmm.
I have a tree that's about 10 or 15 years old, so it's not fully mature yet. And can I plant hostas around the base? And how do I do that without damaging roots?
Luckily, hostas, you could tie those to the bumper of the car, drag them around, throw them on the lawn, and they'll grow. So you've got a really easy plant there, and you don't need to go extremely deep. What I am concerned about is that your tree will get enough nutrient, especially a younger tree. What you need to do is make sure that you're fertilizing that younger tree every year and making sure that it gets water around the root zone, not next to the trunk. So really under, if you're going to put hostas around it, allow enough space so that there's airflow around the trunk. So the ring is going to look like a donut. Basically, the hosta ring is going to look like a donut. And then you just want to make sure that you're fertilizing and watering sufficiently so that the tree doesn't get outcompeted by the hostas. Okay. And you don't need to go very deep. Yeah, and you do have to be careful of those hair roots that are right underneath the surface. Most feeder roots are going to be within the top 18 inches, so do dig carefully and try to damage as little as possible.
Okay, sounds good. You should have pretty good luck with that, and hostas are pretty darn easy to grow,
aren't
tough. They?
They're
yeah,
tough.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we were talking about vines earlier, and either Robert or Carolyn, I don't know which, put a picture of their wisteria in full bloom on our Facebook page, and it is beautiful.
Yep.
And it looks like they're south of Eau Claire, I mm-hmm. think is what she meant. So, I mean, wisteria's always been one of my favorites, and I've always thought that was hard to grow, but
no. No, it is weedy.
Okay.
It is weedy. And our native wisteria, and we do have a native wisteria, is not as fragrant as the Chinese wisteria. And so oftentimes people will go with the Chinese rather than the native U.S. one. The scent can be a little bit off-putting to some people on the U.S. It's not as attractive.
Okay.
But it doesn't get as invasive as the Chinese wisteria does. My mother put in a Chinese wisteria thinking this was going to be a wonderful thing. And on arbor number 3, we decided to just mow the darn thing off. And now we continue to just mow the darn thing off. It pulled everything down.
Yes.
It grows so fast and it winds and it just pulls things right down.
Okay.
And so you do have to be a bit cautious on what you put up for structure if you're going to use Chinese. Otherwise, the ones that we have available, and they're readily available, so I suggest people try them. They thrive on neglect. They thrive on abuse.
Great.
They really, I know, they're a perfect plant, perfect mm-hmm. vine to have. And that's a lovely picture.
Yes.
They've got a lovely arbor up.
Yep. It certainly is. And it looks like it's sturdy, so they should be okay.
And now is the time. They're just finishing their flowering for us down here. So up there, they're probably just reaching their peak and going to back off a little bit soon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Glenn from Glendale. Hi, Glenn. What's your question?
Hi. I tried planting passion flower seeds indoors, and they didn't sprout. And then I put some outdoors, and they haven't sprouted yet. And I'm wondering, like, what do I do? How do I make passion flower seeds grow?
Did you nick them or soak them or anything?
Yeah, I soaked them for a day ahead of time.
And what kind of soil do you have them in, and what kind of site?
I have them right now. They're outdoors in full sun all day and on a deck where it gets kind of hot.
Okay. And you had no luck planting them indoors?
Well, I just did it a few weeks before it got warm enough to go outside, and nothing came up. I saw on a webpage that they could sit dormant and not sprout for up to a year.
It's very possible. It depends on, is this from a passion fruit, or did you actually get passion flower seed?
I got the seed.
Okay. And what did they tell you on the packet?
I ordered them online, and it was in Chinese mostly.
Okay. What you might want to do is to go to one of the garden centers in Milwaukee and see if you can't get some passion fruit seed that is not in Chinese and is in English. It might be that it's old seed. It might be seed that's fine, but it's hard to say because you can't read the packet, right? I mean, who knows? Who knows? You shouldn't have any trouble with passion vine. Passion vine actually grows very, very well. And you just, if you can't get it started in the ground, I would start it in a peat pot. Don't take it out of the peat pot and put it in the ground right in the peat pot. But generally, that should go fairly easily. The season is so long for those that I don't know that you're going to get flower before we frost, though. That's the unfortunate thing.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Glenn. Maybe you know somebody who can read Chinese, too. Our guest today is Liz Freemuth, and we're taking calls about gardening. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today. Do you have any questions for her? Well, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Welcome back to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today. Larry is off because, you know, he was inducted into the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame last night, and it was wonderful, and he was so excited, and so we're so pleased for him. But let's go back to the phones, Liz, and take some questions. First up is Jim in Manitowoc. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. How are you?
Well, what's your question?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call, guys. I'm actually pretty excited to call you. I'm a first-time homeowner, and
yay!
I really want to get into gardening. My mom is actually aging pretty considerably, and she's always wanted to have kind of a fairy garden sort of look at her house. And I'm actually going to try to do it at my house for her to kind of surprise her because she's unable to do that anymore.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking right now. I have really honestly a blank canvas. I don't have a huge yard, but I would like to get a nice big flowering tree, maybe flowering, maybe not, but a nice big shade tree to grow in the middle of the backyard to kind of serve as the anchor to the backyard. And I was curious if you guys have any ideas of any kind of like enchanted or fantasy-like trees that could grow fairly quickly in the back, and maybe what sort of good shade flowers would be good for that sort of an environment.
Ooh, I love that question. Okay, enchanted. Does she like stories that go along with the plants?
She loves anything. Really, okay. She, you know, her big thing is she really would like to attract things like dragonflies, butterflies, okay, stuff like that to it as well.
Okay, one of my favorite is, and you're in Manitowoc, it'll grow there. One of my favorite trees is Heptacodium, and it is seven sunflower tree, and you can grow it either as a multi-stem or a single stem. And the leaves are big, and you can really get kind of an arching shape to it, which will allow you to plant and create underneath it. And it doesn't have a tremendous root system, and it will grow easily to about 20 feet. But if you have a small yard, that's really about the size that you need. You don't need a 40-footer in your yard. Or are you thinking you need a 40-footer in your yard?
Well, not necessarily. You know, I went to the local tree nursery, and they had suggested an autumn blaze maple, but those grow incredibly high, so I don't know exactly what I need, because like I said, I'm a budding gardener.
Okay, for a budding gardener, we're going to get you started on the right foot, and it's not autumn blaze maple. For that size yard and for fairy garden, and the only reason I say that, because they're lovely in many other situations, but if you want to create something underneath that tree, I think that maple is going to shade out, and the roots are going to outcompete things that you want to put underneath it. And so I suggest look at Heptacodium. It's Heptacodium, Myconoides. Just look up Heptacodium, it'll come up. And it's a fantastic tree. It nice big leaves. It flowers in July, and I love it. The bees love it. The insects love it. And it comes at a time when they're a little bit in between sources for food. And so that makes it really attractive. And the flowers are gorgeous. It comes from the Three Gorges Dam region, which I don't think they've been able to find any natives after they flooded the Three Gorges Dam region. But this plant has been around for millions of years, and they've actually picked seed out of different types of soil situations, from dry to slightly wet, and so it will survive an awful lot of stuff. And so it's something that for your yard you probably would do very well. Now, with that in, it's going to take about 4 or 5 years for it to really take off. No matter how big you get it, it's going to take some time. Most trees will take 4 years to really start shooting out a lot of new growth. Now, if you're talking fairy gardens for shade, you'll have some sun before it gets too shady underneath there. So some transition plants, think about, I would say, starting out with some of the basics. And as a newbie, I'm going to tell you what I would do. And that is go to the garden centers every 2 to 3 weeks, maybe once a month, and look at what's in flower at those various times throughout the year and look at what you like. And you're going to be looking for different leaf textures and colors. You can't go wrong with Japanese painted ferns. There's one called Godzilla that actually gets a little bit bigger that's gorgeous. And that will give you a nice backdrop because it will reach to about 30 inches. And that, again, nice backdrop. It will go well with the Heptacodium. You can do lungworts. You can do Bergenia. That's Bergenia. That will do well in sun or shade. It has nice flowers. It's got funky leaves. And you can go with forget-me-nots. And also, I think in Manitowoc, you should be able to go with Ceratostigma, which is a plumbago that's hardy for us up north. And so it has blue flowers on it also. And they're low to the ground. And primroses will do beautifully. That's a nice, another little fairy plant. Later in the season, go with some shorter asters. A lot of those will tolerate part shade. You may have to move them as that shade deepens. And let's see, what else could you put in there?
Well, that
should give you enough to
beautiful.
Get started.
Absolutely gorgeous. I want to see that garden. So when it
Send
gets nice, yeah, let us know, Jim. We want to see pictures. Okay, well, let's go to Jan. Excuse me, Jan in Madison. Hi, Jan. Looks like you might have a new garden, too, huh?
Yes, I do. And I have always wanted to plant what I think is called a scarlet runner.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I have a fence that goes east and west, but I am on the north side of it. Can I plant it? Would it do well? It gets, you know, sun sometimes during the day. And then it has a lot of shade, too, because it's on the north side.
How heavy is the shade?
How heavy?
Yeah. Is it deep shade, or does it get a little bit of sunlight coming through?
Oh, it gets a little bit of sunlight coming through.
Okay. Beans actually should do okay as long as the soil is warm. They don't like their roots moved. So if you wanted to get them started in a peat pot and plant the peat pot in the ground, you could do that. But scarlet runner beans are pretty tough, and if they get at least a little bit of light after they get started, you should be okay. So unless it's really deep, deep shade, then they probably won't do okay. But they are gorgeous beans, absolutely gorgeous. Another one you might try or take a look at is hyacinth bean. That one is fabulous also. And that one I have found, tough as nails, will grow in a semi-shady situation. As long as it gets some top light, I would say go for it.
Yeah, go for it, Jan. Thank you. You know, we also wanted to talk about, we're talking about vines and things that maybe will work and won't, and you know, trying to make things look a little different. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned about, you got a perennial bed, maybe you got a hole in it, maybe mm-hmm. something's not doing so good. What are your suggestions for putting something in there to make it pop?
You know, we have talked about putting vegetables all over the place in people really do want to grow their own produce. And in a perennial bed, typically there's not a lot of light. And
right.
things that normally really need quite a bit of sun are not going to do tremendously well unless you put them in a pot and raise that pot up.
Well, that's a great idea.
So really, how many of us don't have unused terracotta pots around?
Yeah.
Tip one over upside down, put another one on top of it, and that will get it up above that perennial layer that's going to shade it. Lettuces will do fine anywhere. They will grow in shade, so you can sprinkle lettuce almost anywhere. The same thing with arugula. Arugula I love to use as a border plant. You just sprinkle the seeds down, and you can pick it. It actually has a pretty white flower on it, but that's something that will grow in a semi-shady situation also. Yeah, there's so many ways that you can do something easy like that, but to me, that's the best thing. Eggplant looks fantastic in a perennial garden.
Yes.
I mean, it's just
beautiful
wonderful.
Leaves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they came up with so many wonderful dwarf plants that you can do the same thing with a raspberry there and blueberries. They've got the shortcake series that are really compact, and so you can keep them in the container, raise the container up, and they really don't do, I hate to tell the breeders, they really don't do that well on the ground, so they are container plants,
sure.
And that makes it good. And really look at a blueberry for us around here, unless you've got very, very low pH soil as an annual, stick it in a pot and make yourself happy, and then put it in the ground. If it grows, it grows. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Sure. What about like annuals? Can you do the same thing putting annuals into the perennial bed?
And you can really just pop annuals anywhere. Doesn't have to be in a container, doesn't have to be in an annual bed. To me, an annual is a way to fill a space that you might be waiting for something to expand and to grow, so pick something wonderful. And the coleus that are out there right now are unbelievable.
They are.
So you
they
get season long color, and it is wonderful. And the big King Kongs are fantastic. The leaves are massive on those. But the reds, purples, rusts are just wonderful to put in the garden. And I had a color woman tell me one time, I had gone to a color class for weaving, totally not related to gardening.
Color's color.
Color's color. And the color that actually vibrates really nicely with a lot of our plants is circus peanut orange.
Oh, yes.
And so when I go to look for a new plant to try, if you start around that circus peanut orange and kind of work your way one way or the other, you come out okay.
Yeah, it's a nice peachy color.
It is. A lot of our plants are green and purple, and so that circus peanut orange really vibrates nicely. Yep.
Cross the color wheel. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Linda in Oshkosh with a question. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
What can we help you with?
Hello. I asked me, I think someone might have answered a little bit. I want a vine in the shade and a blooming vine, and I know that's hard to come by.
Mm-hmm, that it is. And it's totally shady?
It gets a little wet sun. But it's under a maple tree.
So. Mm. And why are you thinking a vine would be good for that spot? What are you looking for?
Well, I already have a post there, and I have put a vine in. I have put several vines in there. I had a clematis in there, but of course, they need a little more sun.
They do. Yep. They do.
So that's what I'm looking for, something just to pop during summer.
Boy, you gave me a real stumpy one. If it's that heavy of shade, boy, there is not a whole lot that is going to do fantastically in Vineland. You actually may try a sweet potato vine. They typically love full sun, but I have found that some of the variegated, the ones that have got the pink, green, and white on them, actually do a little bit better with some shade. And so that you could go and pick one up, and you'd have to tie it up. It's not going to climb. So you'd have to tie it a little bit if you wanted to go up the post. But, you know, honestly, what I would tell you to do, how tall is the post?
How tall is the post? Maybe 10 feet.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to get anything in the shade to grow 10 feet. You could try a wisteria. Wisteria might be about the only thing that you could get to go up 10 feet in the shade. But the unfortunate thing is you're not going to get a lot of flowers in that much shade. I have seen down south the heat will actually provide enough that you'll get some flower. But up here, I'm not so sure we're going to do that. Of course, this year, yeah, we would. You might think about cutting the post off.
That's what I was going to suggest.
And I say that because 10 feet is awfully tall. And if you have a spot in the shade, if you cut the post off, if it's cuttable, you could actually mount a container on there.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
rather than have something climbing up, you could actually get some flowers in that area at a height where you can take care of it and really change it out. And that's as easy as nailing a plastic container onto the post and take it down to about 3-4 feet. And that would actually be nice. Then anything climbing underneath doesn't have to go 10 feet. Under a maple, in shade,
That's a rough one.
Yeah, I would give those things a try, but and probably wisteria is going to be about your best bet, unfortunately. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Linda. Appreciate that. We got an email from Gabriel. He's a new gardener, and he has a small chimney on the east side of his home. Is there a specific colorful vine that would grow to cover the 20-foot chimney without being too invasive? He wants everything.
I love that. If you don't ask, you don't get.
That's right.
So
that's true.
It's
that's very true.
Is, you know, it would be good to know if there's any shade. Actually, the climbing hydrangeas would cover, and they're not horribly invasive. And what you would be looking for is actually hydrangea, and I think it's Anomala petiolaris, possibly. And Miranda is a good variegated leaf. I think it's Miranda. That is not quite as hardy, and so it will climb a little bit slower. And so that may actually work for you. But that one will cling to the concrete on your home, on your chimney. So you do want to be a bit careful about that. You could go with ivies. Ivies are always a good choice. You do lose the leaves during the winter, but you're going to lose that with almost everything. We don't have climbers that are going to be really, really evergreen for us. But those two I would definitely try.
Okay.
It's not going to be as colorful.
No.
But we don't, without going tropical and planting them every year, we're not going to get a lot of color.
Yeah. And yeah. 20 feet is
pretty
high.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Irene from Phillips. Hi, Irene. What is your question?
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a young tree in the I'm a little off topic. I have a young tree planted 3 years ago, a maple, in front of my home in memory of my husband, and a nurseryman came and put it in, and it had the leaves have little black spots. Many leaves have little black spots all over them. I'm wondering what it is and how I can get rid of it.
When you look at the spots in the light and you kind of look at it at an angle, and you probably haven't done this because only weird people like me do this, does it look kind of like a fingerprint? Does it look like it's raised above the surface of the leaf and it has striations through it that resemble a fingerprint?
I don't think so. I've taken quite a few leaves down and looked at them pretty closely. I don't think so. I've looked it up online, and it says something about tar spots or something.
That is tar spot that I described to you.
Oh, really?
Yes. And and it's not anything that I would worry about. It's something that does happen. Some trees are a little bit more prone to it than others. But seasonally, right now, we have had so much moisture and so much heat that our fungal pathogens are going hog wild, crazy happy. So I would not worry about it. And you may actually see a cycle where it gets worse for a year or two, and then it's going to fall off and it will even out a bit, and you should actually be okay. In order to treat this, you would have to start spraying before the leaf buds actually crack open, or as they are cracking open, because they can be infected at that point, and you would have to spray every like 10 to 14 days throughout the season in order to not have the issue. In my mind, I would say learn to love the black spots. I love polka dots. And it's at the, you know, the tree is fairly young. So I would say make sure that it gets plenty of water so that it can actually, if the leaves fall off, they will re-leaf, and especially this time of the year. And then late in fall, after a hard frost, you're going to want to give it some fertilizer, but don't do it until then. You should be okay. It's not, normally it isn't anything that kills a tree.
Yeah, and Irene, you're not alone. We had a lot of that last year, and I'm sure with this weather, we'll have a lot this year,
you
too.
You bet.
You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We're talking with Liz Fremont. She provides concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Hoe. Our lines are, well, actually, we have an open line, so give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, and you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Coming up next Friday on Garden Talk, we'll be live from Green Bay Botanical Gardens, and we'll be talking about how to care for summer gardens. I hope you can join us there. If you would like to come to the show, you can certainly try. We're getting close on being full, of course, but you never know. We might get you in, but you can always listen online or on the radio. And let's go back to the phones right away. We have Judy in Lodi who has a question. Hi, Judy.
Hi, I have a situation. Yesterday I went and bought about 12 different herbs, not thinking. I didn't buy any dirt to put them in. I got a lot of pots. I'm disabled, and I live in an apartment building, and I can put them outside in the back because I'm on the first floor. The problem is I don't know what kind of dirt to get for them, and also I need help putting them in pots.
Hmm. My suggestion to you would be to get a hold of the extension office in your area. Oftentimes there are master gardeners who are available to help, and I'm not sure what their criteria are for those that they will help, but it is worth a shot to ask. And Lodi, I'm not sure who that would be.
Is that Dane County?
Is Lodi in Dane County? Does anybody know is Lodi in Dane County?
Judy, are you in Dane County?
No, it's Columbia County.
Columbia County.
I would get a hold of the Columbia County offices, UW Extension, and ask to get put in touch with their master gardening program. So that's going to be through UW Extension. And then have them give you, ask if they'll give you a hand. As far as the dirt for those, if you're going to put them into the pots, what you need is a good potting mix. And you're not going to want to use soil out of the ground because you don't want to bring in any pathogens into an enclosed situation such as a pot. So I would say if you're going to go shopping, just get a nice moisture retentive potting soil and you should be good. But give Columbia County Extension a call.
And if they can't help you, Judy, you may want to think about one of the senior centers in your area. And there's a lot of the health departments also have elder care that might be able to help you, too. So good luck with that, Judy. It's always nice to have fresh herbs. So I understand what you want to do. Let's go to Tristan in Wausau. Hi, Tristan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. What's your question?
Well, I'd like to try some help identifying something in our yard. We have seems to have characteristics of a vine, but it has a trunk with bark on it. Even the larger limbs have bark on them, but all of their branches and buds and stuff are very, very viney, and they've been crawling up electrical lines in our garage and getting all over the place, and to the point where even the taller ones are hanging down almost to a 6-foot height over our yard. And I'm just wondering what I can do to identify and my options for maintaining to try and stay away from wires and stuff like that.
Yeah, without identifying it, how to maintain it is going to be a little bit iffy. And so what I would suggest is, again, go to the extension office in your area, take a sample and take a picture and a sample. And you might be able to do that online. I can't imagine why you couldn't submit pictures to see if they could start with ID that way.
Or emails. They email, take a lot of emails.
Absolutely. But make sure you get some good, clear pictures of them. And figuring out what it is will help you to figure out how to control it. Oftentimes the vines, if they are good perennial vines, will develop woody structure on their stems as they age, just like other things do. And so it may, in this area, it's hard to tell what it might be without a picture. So that would be my suggestion for you.
Okay, Tristan. Well, good luck with that one. Let's go to Janine in Darlington. Hi, Janine.
Hi. I have a black lace elderberry bush that it seems to be withering before my very eyes. It's every day I go look at it and it is like literally wilting. There's new growth on it and then all of a sudden that new growth and then some, it's just kind of like bowing down and wilting.
Yeah, this time of the year, and it's been getting water.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's like 5 years old.
Yeah.
So it's done fine where it is. It's not like it's a new plant and kind of trying to acclimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What elderberries are susceptible to is verticillium wilt, which does start to show in late, kind of early to midsummer. We're a little bit early, but also our season started a bit early as well. What you can do to check for that, and it's not 100%, the 100% way to check for this is to send some tissue that is starting to wilt into Brian at the Plant Disease Lab in Madison. It's not an expensive test. It's maybe 20 $25 for you. You could probably submit it through your extension office also, and have that submitted to the lab. It can be a huge problem for certain plants. It gets into the vascular system. It's in the soil, and it gets into the vascular system. And as that plant tries to close off around the infection that's invading it, it actually kills itself off. And so what you're seeing, that wilting, could potentially be the plant trying to close off that infection, but thereby closes off the water-conducting tissue, causing the wilting. And that's the symptom that we see. And it's good to know whether that's what the problem is or not, because there are lists of plants that will do fine in areas that have verticillium in the soil. And again, it's in the soil. We have it all over the place. It's just sometimes plants are susceptible. Sometimes it's rife for hitting something, and this might be your time. And so what you would want to do is submit a sample where the tissue is starting to wilt, and you want a branch that's maybe like a quarter to a half an inch across. Yeah, it's about right. Even about a quarter of an inch. Yeah, I'm putting my fingers together. Yeah, about a quarter of an inch. But what you do want to do is disinfect your equipment after you make those cuts, because otherwise that pathogen can stay on your equipment, and without disinfecting, you can actually move it to another plant if it's susceptible. So you do want to do that. And then Brian's got good description of how to submit those samples on his website, which is Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. You can look that up online, and his website is very good about that. He also has information sheets on verticillium wilt to help you understand other plants that might be usable in that spot. But that's the first thing that comes to mind. So it's nothing you're doing, and 5 years, 4 to 5 years is right about the time where if a plant is going to get it, that's when it does start to get it. Now, Brian will tell you to take it out. I will tell you that what I've done is field research, and if he was here, I would say the same thing. We arm wrestle about this. It's sort of like a plant leukemia. Sometimes it will take it out completely and totally. Other times, what I've had happen in my own yard where I've played with this is I cut the plant back and just see what's going to happen. And often they'll resprout. And in the case of my red bud that I've been playing with, it goes about 4 years, and then it dies off again, and I cut it back, and it resprouts, and I get some flowers for a year, and by that time then it gets it again, I cut it off, and it resprouts, and I just let it keep going. And if it's in a prominent spot in your yard, you might not want to do that. You might want to just get rid of it and do something else. But my yard is deathscaped. Things are always in the process of dying.
It's a new term, deathscaping.
Deathscape, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Janine. Really appreciate that call.
Good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, a lot of people will be, okay, I love this plant. Mm-hmm. It looks terrible. I keep trying to keep it. It's in the front of my yard, or it means something. How do you know when you should just,
if you're asking,
cut your losses?
If you're asking those questions, you probably should cut your losses.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is a really hard thing for many people to do, especially if there's some history with that plant. And so to me, a nice cold beverage on a warm night, sit in a chair, look at the plant, say goodbye, and then bite the bullet.
To everything, there is a season.
There is. And I look at it as an opportunity to learn from what happened, to go shopping for something else, and give it a whirl.
Okay.
It's all okay.
Yeah.
Can be tough. The other thing you can do is take a cutting off of it and see if they can get it to grow some other way, because sometimes not all of the plant is affected at that point. So you can actually do some propagation off of it.
Very true. Yeah. And probably look into how to do it correctly before you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. All right, well, let's go take another call. We've got Carol in Oak Creek. Hi, Carol.
Yes, good morning. I have two questions. I am kind of new to perennials, but I took a chance. I planted a clematis, which was about a foot tall, and the second year I was just amazed at the length of the vine as it wrapped around its little tendrils around my bird feeder poles and produced many, many small flowers. The third year, which was last year, again before I knew it, it grew like a weed up the bird poles, produced so many, like they're about 4 inches across the flowers. They were gorgeous. Now this year, the vine is only about 5 foot tall, but it still is producing flowers and looks very healthy. And now I see how, and I see how it grows from this woody-like vine. And can you tell me what to do to get this vine to grow longer? And how does this plant do what it does so well, sprouting from what appears to be dead wood? This is brand new to me.
They are a wonder. Have you cut the vine back at all?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
Okay. I don't recommend people cut clematis vines back unless they know exactly which clematis they have, because otherwise if you cut it at the wrong time, you could set it back tremendously. What clematis do like, or clematis, depending on where you're from, both pronunciations are fine. They are heavy feeders, and so they do need some fertilizer, and they like their roots slightly cool, but they like some top heat. So they're a little fussy about that. My grandma always planted them on her front porch, which faced north, but it got plenty of sun. So the roots were cool at the base, and they grew big and tall because they got sun in the afternoon on their leaves and on their stems. And to me, that was the perfect spot. Grammy knew what she was doing. And I think if you start looking at maybe putting a little bit of mulch down at the base and giving it some fertilizer, I think you'll be fine. It sounds like it's doing wonderfully, that it's happy where it's at. And I think having it by the bird feeder, you are getting some fertilizer because the birds are sitting and eating and they're doing their business right there, which is wonderful. But you may want to think about getting a plant fertilizer on there also. And how do they do what they do? That's the wonder of plants.
That's right.
That's their nature.
It's magic.
It is. I love it. Absolutely love it.
We got an email from Amy, and she has several acres of very sandy, full sun in Oconto County that she'd like to turn into prairie. And she wants to know what the best way to start, and what does burning the grass currently there do? Some native plants are already growing.
Well, when you burn prairie, it depends on when you burn as to what you're going to spur into growth. And really, this is a prairie guy question. So, you know, I'm just going to give you the basics, and you ask the prairie dude when he's here about it.
Yeah, he was here last week, I think.
Yeah, and he is absolutely awesome. But the best way to start is take a look at what you have. And really identify the plants that are in there. If you know that you have native plants, you want to identify which ones those are and see what you have for invasives also, to see where you need to start from. If you have a tremendous amount of invasives, even though you do have some natives, you might be better off starting all over, because sometimes those invasives will outcompete the native seed or the plants that you might want to put in. So you have to identify what's there and then figure out where your best starting point is based on the percentage of good versus evil plants. Well, evil, it's a judgmental call. Non-desirable plants, let's put it that way. And what does burning do? Burning promotes growth of certain plants at certain times of the year. When you burn early in spring, you're actually burning that residue off that has protected the crown of the grasses, and you heat that up to spur growth on. If you burn in the fall, you're really burning to promote more of the flower production, and what you do with that is you wait till after the seed has fallen. That actually heats the ground and the seed up, encouraging them to get busy before winter comes. So that's why you do different timing on the burns. So that would be my recommendation.
I think Neil would agree with you on that one, Liz. Yeah. Thanks for tackling it. Let's go back to the phones real quick and talk to Laurel from Coleman. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. I am trying to find out what kind of shrub I have. I have white pine I planted on a hill. I have sandy soil. And it blossomed. It's wild. It just goes nuts. The seeds must fly off or something. And they're growing. They're about 10 feet tall, and they have many branches at the bottom, and they have tiny small leaves. And they just got through blossoming in May, and they have a sweet smell.
What color are the blossoms? Are white.
Yeah, and they're small too. And I have many, but they're invading my white pines, and I started cutting them back, but I'm just wondering if they are an invasive shrub. They aren't a tree because they come up from the ground, and it's many trunks, but are small.
Are they starting to develop a red sea or a red fruit on it where the flowers had blossomed, or not quite yet?
Not quite yet, but I think they do.
Okay, honeysuckle. That would be honeysuckle, and they do have a lovely smell when they blossom.
Yes.
But they are terribly invasive, and one of the best ways, I'm not a chemical person, but and this is one of those instances where I use the big but, I'm not a chemical person, but the best way to get rid of them is to cut them off and paint the stems with Roundup or something similar.
They're
nasty thing. Otherwise, just continue to cut them off and see if you can get them controlled that way.
Okay. Well, good luck, because I know lots of people have problems with
it
that.
It is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've been talking with Liz Freemuth on this edition of Garden Talk. She provides concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Hoe, and shares her knowledge with us on a regular basis. Hope you can join us next week when we broadcast live from the Green Bay Botanical Gardens. But stay with us. There's lots more to come on the Ideas Network. Welcome back to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm filling in for Larry Mueller today. We have Liz Freemuth back with us. She provides concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Hoe, and we're taking your garden questions, so give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, and of course, you can also post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We've got a Facebook page post, Liz, from Diane, and she sent a picture of a hosta with a black walnut tree growing next to it, right next to their house, and she wanted to know if you had any help for her, any suggestions about how to separate the two.
In general, to me, a black walnut is not the most desirable of tree, but other people do like them, but it raises the question of how do you pull apart two things that shouldn't be growing together. And understanding the root systems of both of them are a good idea before you start yanking it apart. The black walnut is pretty tough, and so I think if you start yanking around on the root, it will probably be okay. Likewise with the hosta. Hosta's okay, but in other situations, that may not be the case. So what you would want to do is pull up that entire planting. So with I love potato forks, garden forks, for doing that because it cuts a lot less roots than using a spade. But I would do a couple of those, lift that out of the ground, put it onto a tarp or onto a piece of cardboard or something like that so that you can tease those roots apart. And that means you knock off as much dirt gently as possible so you can see what the roots are doing. And that hosta looks like it needs to be divided anyway.
Yeah, it's
so
pretty big.
It's starting to grow in and amongst itself. And excuse me. So pulling that apart and then looking at that tree root in there, or shrub or whatever it would be, another flower, and figuring out how to do the least amount of damage as possible to the root. And pick the tougher plant. The hosta is the tough one. So start yanking those things apart and it'll be fine. And it needs to be divided. And even if you wanted to plant it all back together, it would be okay. But once you've got that teased out, then you can put that tree into either a container or into another site. Get it watered in good, make sure the soil is nice and loose and well watered for a nice period of time, and you should be fine. And that's the case with almost anything. You just tease them apart.
Sure. And I know the size of that particular black walnut, it doesn't look like it's going to have much of a root system.
Probably not.
So it should be fairly easy to do.
It should be fairly easy. Yeah. And when I say tease it apart, it's gently pull it apart so that you're not breaking off the bottom of that root, because it's going to have a bit of a tap root on it. And so you do want to be a little bit careful of not disturbing the end of that if you can at all do that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. And we do have a couple of lines open. So if you've been waiting, now's your time to call. Let's go to Rita in Oshkosh. Rita, what's your question?
Hi. I have a couple of questions, or one remark rather. We got a gift, a passion plant, and I realized it's in a wrong zone. Do I have any chance by doing something to it to get it through the winter to get it to be a perennial?
Sure. Passion vine is a perennial. It's just up here. It's an annual outside. But if you want to put it into a pot and place it outside during the summer and then acclimate it back in to winter, you can keep it year after year. You may have to do a little bit more pruning on the vine, and that's going to take a bit of finesse so that you can get those flowers, but it should actually do just fine. What you want to do to acclimate them in and out is to give them a chance to get used to the different sun intensities going out and then coming back in. And you can do that over a couple of weeks. You put it into shade first if you're taking it from the house and putting it outside. You would put it into a shady situation, and then you would move it slowly into a little bit more sun. Because it is a tropical, you don't want to do that until the night temps are above 50, which is that's a long time past. So you're good to go outside. And even if we do get a cool evening, it's not going to be enough to take it out. And you're going to want to do the same when you bring it back in for winter. And the reason you do that is you want those plant cells to be able to stretch on their own rather than give up the ghost. If you move it too quickly, those cells cannot adapt to accommodating the more direct and intense sunlight, and likewise the less sunlight going back in over the winter. And so you do that slowly over time to allow those things to naturally stretch. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you lose all the leaves and they'll pop new ones and it'll set it back a little bit. But most of the time, they'll survive.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rita. Hope you have a success with that one. Let's go to Julie. She's in Iowa. What's your question, Julie?
I was given some mallow seed, M-A-L-L-O-W, mm-hmm. and I just was wondering, on the internet, it called them cheeseweed. And I was wondering if I plant them, it'd be invasive.
It depends on which mallow it is. Some are a little bit more invasive than others. If it is one that has kind of a lavender and purple look to the flowers, generally those will spread like wildfire. But how you can control that, if you do want to give it a whirl, is to pick the flowers off before they go to seed, and you won't have a problem. So it depends on how much work you want to put into it. Some people would say, yes, they're horribly invasive. Mallow, I actually think, is a halfway decent plant. And if you can control it, either pull up the new plants that are coming out or, again, cut the flowers off before they go to seed, you should be all right.
Okay. Is that kind of true with most plants? If you take away that flower head, it will help to control them?
Yep.
Okay.
And sometimes people like to do that just to have something to do in the evening, you know, go out and deadhead. There are people who I have found love to do all sorts of the odd pieces of gardening. And oftentimes accompanied with a glass of wine and a pruner's, you know, it's awesome. With a bucket on your side, it's wonderful. But taking it off before the seeds are developed and fall to the ground will control it. You do have to kind of take into consideration that birds may move some things around too. So you just have to.
Yeah, you have to be.
You have to weigh the options. You know, how close are your neighbors? Are they going to hate you if you put it in?
Right.
Do you mind if they hate you? I don't know.
Think these things through
before
you plant, right?
Uh-huh.
We actually have a bunch of lines open. So if you've been waiting to ask a question on Garden Talk, now, this is your day. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we've got Drake calling from Hurley. Hi, Drake. What's your question?
Hi. So,
hello? Oops, Willa. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Recently, I got my girlfriend two different plants to be potted in.
Oh, you know what, Drake? We are losing you.
I'm going to guess.
Yes.
I'm going to take a guess on this one, because it says, how big a pot for growing peonies indoors? And you don't need to grow peonies indoors because they're cold-loving plants. Even up in Hurley, you should be absolutely okay. Even a tree peony will do beautifully up in Hurley. Down south, they envy us because they cannot grow peonies. We can. It is a cold weather plant. Don't worry about it. You don't have to do anything to it. If you do choose to grow one indoors, I'm not so sure how they'll do, because we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And so I've never really tried. I would say that you're going to have to provide light for it, probably additional light, because it's not a house plant. It needs sun. The only one I would try indoors would be a tree peony, a shrubby peony, because that will grow in part shade.
Okay. Well, good luck with that, Drake. Sorry we couldn't hear you on that one, but let's go to Patrick in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Patrick. Do you have a question for us? Patrick, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question?
Hi, I have a question. I have a dead space in my yard that'll grow nothing but weeds.
Okay.
And it runs right along my driveway and by my garage.
Mm-hmm.
And it will grow milkweeds, ferns, and every other weed you can think of.
Milkweed and ferns sounds actually pretty good.
Yeah, I kind of like that, actually.
What are you looking for? What kind of a look are you looking for?
I tried to do a kind of a prairie garden along that side, and not even prairie flowers could drown out the weeds.
Well, milkweed is a prairie flower.
Yeah, milkweed is a lovely prairie flower.
And that's why I left it.
Okay.
I pulled up, I think for 2 years I've been pulling weeds along this spot.
Okay. Did you try to do prairie from seed or with plants?
Seed.
Okay. What you might actually want to do is to try getting some grasses in there, because if it's sunny and a tough spot, often the prairie grasses will do beautifully in there. They love that kind of thing. You need to get water on them to get them started, but once they're established in the ground, you should be fine to just leave them and not have to worry about it at all. I would suggest, depending on the height that you want, prairie drop seed would do very well. It is a tough plant. Also, the big blue stems would do fine there as long as it's sunny. That tolerates an awful lot of dry. And there shouldn't be any reason why putting plants in that shouldn't do very well there. If the milkweed is going, those other plants should do fine also. So I would go and get some plants and pop those in.
Okay.
And see if you have better luck that way. Seed, unless you're extremely patient, will take a good few years to really even just get started. And you may see some babies coming up year one, and they're going to slowly grow. But if the weeds are in there, you might actually have pulled out some of the baby grass and pulling the weeds out. Typically, if you're starting a prairie from seed, you're going to weed whack at about 4 inches, 6 inches, somewhere around in there, for a couple of years to let those plants actually get started, because if you disturb that soil too much, the seeds will give up.
And should he worry about, you know, if it's by the driveway, salt or, you know, that kind of a thing?
Typically, they will survive okay. If you're next to a driveway, anytime you're next to a driveway with a planting bed, what you need to do is just get in there early in spring and flush the salts out with water. And that often will be enough to get it through so that the plants can survive okay. If you're not doing that, then that salt buildup definitely will act as a killer.
Okay. Well, maybe keep that in mind too, Patrick. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Ivy. Great name for Garden Talk in Evansville. Hi, Ivy.
Hi. My question is about the clematis, and I think it's the white, I probably am mispronouncing the species, Augustifolia.
You just go for it. Augustifolia, yes.
Say it with authority, right?
That's right. My dear friend Alan Armitage says, just let it flow out of your mouth, and whatever comes, comes. It's better than not trying at all. Go for it.
Well, anyway, mine, I've planted several of them, and they do well the first season,
mm-hmm.
and then they often seem to not come back, and I was just wondering what you can tell me about them. I have other clematis that are growing right now, and that plant is just sitting there, and I'm not seeing any growth. And I was just wondering.
Okay, are they getting sun?
Well, they're in a sunny spot. There are other plants around them, but the other clematis mm-hmm. are right next to them, and they're doing okay.
And okay, does that mean they're growing or?
Oh yeah, they're blooming and they're growing.
And it's just the fall blooming white clematis that's not doing well.
Yeah, that always seems to happen with me.
I actually kill that one on a regular basis myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Don't
worry about it. Unless you kill it 6-7 times, you don't know what it's going to do. So I would continue to give it a whirl. Well, that actually does not like the same kind of base as what your other clematis do. I found that it does a little bit better if it doesn't have as much cool on the roots as your other ones. And I find they do a little bit better if the soil's not as rich. So you may want to move it to a different place and see if you can get it to go at a different place.
Okay. Well,
that would be my suggestion.
Yeah. Does that make sense? I mean,
it does. I mean, if it's not growing there,
obviously it needs a better home.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's not liking its room. Give it another room.
Okay. Great. Let's go to Jimmy in Racine. Hi, Jimmy. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Love your program.
Thank you.
Potatoes. This is my first time doing potatoes in the garden. And here in the Milwaukee Racine area, it's been very hot. It's been very dry. And I keep on watering the garden with the tomatoes and the peppers and whatnot. And I was just wondering about the potatoes. I know from my grandma, she always said you always have to mound the dirt back up, mound the dirt back up. And I was wondering about watering. If they're supposed to maintain the same kind of moisture like the rest of the garden, do they rot? Or that's my question with the potatoes.
I never watered a potato unless it was super, super dry. There is a balancing point, because if you go too far, you're actually going to get a watery potato, which is not going to store well. So, yes, I think if you go up north into the sandy soils, they are irrigating the potatoes definitely, because that's going through. So in the soil that we planted potatoes in, we didn't need to water. And in the situation we were in, we didn't need to water. But for you, if it's dry when you stick your finger down in there, then you need to get some extra water on it. Just don't go hog wild. They don't need as much as a tomato needs or as a pepper needs. Are you mounding the soil up over the top? If you are, then it's getting some nice moisture held in by that soil that continues to build up over the potatoes growing under the ground. So you should be okay.
All right, Jimmy, hope you get a lot of potatoes this year.
I do, too. It's awesome.
So, there's something about growing potatoes. I don't know what, but it's neat. So.
It's satisfying because it's one of the first things you can pull out of the ground.
Well, true.
It's always a surprise. It's just like, how many am I going to get? It's like Christmas present. Yay!
Yes, my father counts them every year. It's funny. let's go to Mary Ellen in Madison. Hi, Mary Ellen. What's your question?
Hi. I have some dahlias that I bought and put in pots on my deck with some other flowers, and they were absolutely gorgeous for about a month. And in the last week or so, their color is kind of fading on the blooms. The foliage almost seems a little chalky, and I'm wondering if I have a fungus or something. They're kind of drooping and not looking so great, and I'd like to be able to bring them back for the rest of the summer.
Chalky, can you rub it off of the leaves? I would suggest that you do that. Go out and on those leaves, kind of rub it and see if you can get a little bit of that off, because it sounds like powdery mildew. And for the weather that we've had, you might need a little bit more air going through those dahlias. Dahlias tend to be a little bit thicker. And if it's in a spot where it's just not getting a lot of airflow, you could potentially have powdery mildew. Easy to treat. Brian Huddleston's website, Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, has a great brochure on powdery mildew with the recipe that you can do at home to spray on it to control for powdery mildew. And I would just pinch back those dahlias that are starting to look a little on the wimpy, wicked side. Also check inside the pots to make sure you're not overwatering. That would be the biggest thing on those. Otherwise, that should actually help you. If it is powdery mildew, getting them treated, you should be back on track.
Okay. Dahlias are so beautiful. I hope you get those working. Let's go to Kevin in Glidden. Hi, Kevin. You have a question for us.
Yes, I do. I have some Hanson and Nanking bush cherries. They've started to, the leaves on the tips of the branches have started to turn brown and slowly comes back down the branch, eventually gets to the trunk. I've noticed it in some of the gray dogwoods and some of the choke cherries that are planted in the same area. They're starting to get the same mess. I think I've lost two cherries so far. Just wondering what it was and what to do about it.
Have you taken them out completely, the cherries?
No.
Okay. What you might want to do is cut them back, because the Nanking cherries actually will resprout if there's any amount of root left on them. And in fact, they should be taken down every once in a while just to resprout the growth. I am a little bit leery to do that because I love it when they get huge. But as soon as they get a big size on them, I get dieback on the branches. And so then it's like, okay, it was time to cut them back. This year, I noticed that there was an awful lot of it. And the dogwoods especially, we've got anthracnose that will take out dogwoods. And so you'd have to take a look at the spots on the stems and on the leaves to actually determine what it is. And what I would suggest is, this is another one of those, send it to Brian at the lab and have him diagnose what it is that you're dealing with. If you cut into it, if you listened earlier, we were talking about verticillium wilt, and you can actually see that in many, many plants. And if you cut into the tissue, you can see some browning on the interior. Normally, it should be a nice clear cream all the way through. If it's got verticillium moving through it, you will see some brown on the interior tissue. It's not 100% field test, but it gives you a little bit of an idea of what you're dealing with. Get an ID from Brian so that you know exactly what you have in your yard. I typically don't worry about the Nanking cherries. I just cut them back, and they will come back okay. Not as big, not as thick, but give them some time, and they should be all right. Same thing with the dogwoods. Anthracnose takes those out. I forget what else you told me you were having trouble with, but really, you may have multiple problems going on. It might not just be one that's taking out all three.
Okay, well, that sounds like it's going to be an experiment.
You know, and it's that type of a year this year where mm-hmm. it's not just one issue that's hitting, it's many issues that are hitting. And the symptoms show up at the same time, and people tend to think it might be one problem and it might not be. So you have to take a close look at it.
Okay. Yeah. All right, and Brian is your best friend for that kind of stuff. So make sure you know that
he
website.
He is. He's the lab dude. He is the
lab dude.
The
I
lab
like it.
Dude.
I think
Dr.
It sounds,
Death.
I was going to say, lab dude sounds friendlier than Dr.
Death.
Death. Yeah. And just real quick before we have to go, Liz, we had Brian post a picture of something that he found on the ground under his oak trees. He mm-hmm. wonders if it's the remnants of oak leaf growth.
It could very well be. I'm looking at it from across the way. It could also be a gooseberry.
That's what I'm thinking. It looks like a gooseberry to me.
Yeah, and it might be that something was eating on them and dropped them or something.
That could very well be.
Galls typically don't separate like that, mm-hmm. you know, from the leaf. And
yeah.
so that's why, to me, it looks like it might be a gooseberry
yeah,
or a currant,
of, or,
you know, depending on the size.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell because it's it's on a deck. But because gooseberries, they look like that when mm-hmm. you cut them in half mm-hmm. and they're green or what have you. So, all right. Well, thanks again, Liz. You've answered so many wonderful questions. We could go on all day, but we can't. So we've been talking with Liz Fremont. She provides concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Ho. Thanks to Jason Butler for on-air production and to Dave Potras for saving me time and time again for our technical direction. Next week on Garden Talk, we'll be at the Green Bay Botanical Gardens, and we'll be talking about keeping your summer garden beautiful. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us. There's more to come.